From the east, he followed the mountains. From the lakes, he followed the sea. A very strong substance was a long time his fountain, brought him to a place where he can finally be. Dive into Darren's journey through life in episode 23 of the Walkie Talkie Podcast.
Good, Walkie Talkie Podcast is recording again after a long summer break. I find a very special spot and a very nice guest. And the beautiful thing again is that I'm a guest at my guest's place. So, which I noticed today while I was driving here, how beautiful this podcast is because it brings me to so nice places. My guest today is Darren. And Darren is a colleague. But I will leave to you to tell a bit who you are and how did we met and where.
Of course.
You can start whenever you feel like, yeah.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, my name is Darren. I'm from Peterborough, Ontario, which is 2,000 miles away from this boat that you're on. I'm 38. I've been in Victoria for a couple of years. Musician slash producer slash videographer. As a hobby, it kind of turned into a bit of a profession, which was really surprising. I didn't realize there was such a demand for video until I started doing it. So yeah, I've been in Victoria for a couple of years. The business is going really well. Brother C Productions, you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, website, brotherc.ca. And that name is the title for all the pages. So feel free to check out. Yeah. I thought I would just plug that in.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
We will repeat that again and again.
I mean, we met in class, which is awesome. This whole course has been super interesting so far, and I'm like really excited to dive into all of the course stuff.
When you say in class, because the listeners don't know what we're doing.
That's right.
Some maybe do what I'm doing, but what are we doing?
That's right. What are we doing? So we are currently studying at the Victoria Academy of Dramatic Arts, which is offering a course for acting in front of the camera, film and TV.
Yeah.
So we're learning how to read and write and all sorts of stuff.
All sorts of stuff. Yeah. That's a good, because there's a lot of stuff happening.
Yeah. It's hard to describe in like a short amount of time.
We have time.
We do have lots of time.
Actually. But first, do you remember when we met? On the first day?
On the first day.
Yeah.
Just introductions and right away they were like ripping you apart.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like, okay.
You were on the spot. Like all of us. Like
everyone. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. I didn't think like it was going to be like that so much.
Yeah.
You know, but here we are. I've been living on the boat. This boat that you're currently on, I bought a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. Our therapy is the 27-foot sailboat that we're on. And it's been my home. Mm. And it's been super lovely. You guys are like the third guest I've had.
Nice.
In here. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I will come back for sure.
Dude.
Let's start a bit back in your journey through life.
Yes.
We're sitting on your boat now, which is super cozy. Started studying together, which is pretty intense, and I love it, and you love it too, I guess. I'm pretty sure. How did you end up in Victoria becoming a video producer and all that stuff? Because you were born somewhere else. Yeah, let's go a bit back. Where are you from?
Sure, no problem. How far back should we go? Let's think.
That's up to you.
It's up to me. Mm-hmm. I mean, I could go all the way back to birth, but I don't know if that's going to...
That you remember your birth? That will be unique because I think we're not able to do it.
I saw the light.
Yeah.
No, I can't remember my birth. Let's see. So I moved out of my hometown when I was 19.
Yeah.
And I moved to Whistler, which is pretty close to here, with a couple snowboards in our backpack and our backpacks. And
19 years old.
19. We were 19 years old. Jumped on a plane. Vroom, never even been here before. We just, a friend had shown us pictures of the top of the mountains.
Yeah.
And where I'm from, there's no mountains.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, we got to check that out. We had a small town ski hill, which is called the Ranch, which was literally a hill, like maybe 200 feet, if that.
Yeah.
So we learned on that and then moved to Whistler to explore the mountains. And the that whole world is super, it's different than what we're used to back home. There's tourists, there's people from all over the world. Like for the first time, I was a little culture shocked. Not that our culture is super different here, but just the lifestyle. It's like, oh, people from Asia, people from Germany, people from wherever, Australia, all over the place. It's like, whoa, I came from a tiny little town that had like, everybody was from there.
Yeah.
You never knew about the world.
Yeah.
So it was like, poof, my eyes were like wide open. I was like, oh my God, there's so much out there.
Yeah.
You know? So I, you know, I'm a bit of a singer songwriter and I've always kind of kept my guitars like right there. You know, I've got my recording stuff here on the boat.
Yeah.
So I've always kind of been a bit of a storyteller and a little bit of a singer and a little bit of a performer.
Artist.
A little bit of an artist, you know. And that was always calling me. But I didn't know really, like, to what ends. I was like, what is it inside of me that's like, calling you for more or pursuing. So I didn't quite know, but I knew that it was there. So I, you know.
And in a voice?
Or yeah. Yeah, maybe like an inner voice, but like also like.
But not loud enough?
Maybe it wasn't loud enough.
Yeah.
You know? But I always gravitated towards anyone that was doing that sort of thing. So like if there was a concert, of course, you love concerts, go to concerts. Or if you're like, somebody that's like doing a play, I would always just like at least go and check it out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So yeah, I kind of just followed that and like partied in Whistler and met tons of people. And eventually the party, we turned 25 and everybody was like going to get a career. It's like, okay, party's over, you know? And I was like, I'm going to party forever. I'm never going to stop.
Because it felt good.
It felt good, right?
You like, felt alive.
Yeah, 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 exactly. So
what were you doing when you were 25? You still were in Whistler?
Yeah, so 25, the Whistler party kind of ended. And I actually ended up moving back to Peterborough, where my family was.
To Ontario?
Back to Ontario.
Yeah, yeah.
Back to Ontario. And at that time, my friends and family were a little bit concerned about where I was, what I was doing with my life. You're 25 years old. You haven't figured it out by any means what you want.
Yeah.
But the behaviors of heavy drinking, being isolated, not being able to talk about your feelings, all that stuff, I think was like pretty obvious. I didn't know what to do except for how to have a good time in quotations.
Yeah.
So that was kind of like, I moved home and I ended up taking like a solar panel course. And then I ended up moving to Edmonton. And then I started working in the oil and gas industry.
As what?
As a pipe fitter. Okay. So it's like heavy industrial plumbing, right? Big machines, So I started doing that as a career because there was lots of money in it.
Yeah.
And there was like a lot. And where I was from, there wasn't a ton of opportunities to get ahead so much, right?
Yeah.
The jobs were drying up, So I started doing that. And then I was living in Edmonton for like 4.5 years, and I was like doing the apprenticeship. I went to school and getting all the hours that you need to get your ticket, your journeyman ticket. So, but in that time, I was on my days off, I was still drinking a lot and I wasn't super happy with what I was doing, but it was money.
Yeah.
You know, and it was a purpose.
Yeah.
It was a purpose. It was like, you're going to have a house. You're going to have everything that you are supposed to have.
So the money can bring you somewhere what you want.
Yes. Yeah.
But not sure what it is. That time, like doing, there was no big goal. Like, okay, if I have that money, I do this. So it just was kind of a vision thing or a...
Yeah, it like I don't know. I guess I never really knew, other than that I was creative, what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of just kept working until I was at a point where I was comfortable. And then I was like, okay, now what am I going to do?
Right.
You got the trade, you've got money, and you want to live somewhere that you're super happy. So I left Edmonton. I moved to Vancouver.
Yeah.
And I was there for 2 years. And I was working at a company called C-SPAN, building ships, big shipbuilding company.
Yeah, yeah.
So still doing that, but still excessively drinking, like weekends after work, do all the time. And I guess looking back now, I wasn't super happy with what I was doing in my life.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to cope with why I wasn't happy with my career or my situation,
yeah,
I would cope by just drinking and drinking and drinking. And
yeah.
Just kept going on and on.
Flush it down.
Yeah.
Can you say that?
Flush it down.
Say that. What doesn't make sense?
I guess you could say like you're like burying your problems.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's like coping.
Mm.
I think it's tied in with like not being able to like express yourself as well. And I think it got to a point where it was like I couldn't even say that I was unhappy.
Because you were not aware of yourself anymore.
Well, I was aware. I was aware that I was unhappy and I was aware that I didn't feel good, but I wasn't able to like say to my friends like, hey, this is really not like I'm really not good.
Yeah.
Everybody else is partying and everybody else is doing their thing. So it's like, how much attention are people going to put on me when they have their own life to worry about, right?
Yeah.
So that was kind of like the beginning of I've got to kind of figure out what I want to do because I'm not happy. So I left Vancouver and I moved to the island.
And when was that?
That was like 2019.
Yeah.
So we're 2024. So yeah, like 7 years ago, 6 years ago.
Before we go in or continue there, I would like to know when you look back now, because you said you were like a heavy drinker for years. How did you see now, looking back, your pathway into that?
I better say that it's very the journey of somebody that's like in addiction is very personal, and I don't like to generalize the topic saying like this happened to me, so this is how it is absolutely for everyone else, because it's very personal.
Yeah.
So anyone that's listening to this that's also like maybe struggling on their own or having some sort of problem like that, right away I would just say like, if you can, ask for some help, even if it's just from a friend, to start somewhere.
Yeah, but whatever happened to you, it's just your individual story. I agree.
Anyway, so I'll just say that, but for me it was like a really slow, it was like forming a habit.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so like slowly forming a habit of drinking to bury the pain or to bury the emotions that I didn't know how to deal with, or I'm not happy, so this is going to make me happy. So it would be on weekends where I would just keep drinking, and over the years, slowly forming this habit of not being truthful to who I was.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
And it's a very slow process that happens over years, which I, looking back now, it's just like, whoa, like there's a lot of times where I wish that I had of spoken out just to find some sort of relief.
Yeah.
Cause it's for me, it was a suffering. It was like, I felt trapped. I didn't know any other way. I would wake up in the morning and the only thing that I knew how to make myself feel better was to start having drinks.
Right.
Just to like come back to this normal place.
Yeah. But it wasn't like, it wasn't that you jumped in there and you stayed there. Like you probably started partying in Whistler your life there. And then it became probably a behavior of doing party and then feeling shitty without alcohol, I guess. And then you keep drinking more and more. And at one point, you're like mid-20s, you feel like, oh, I have to drink to feel myself or to have a satisfaction for a little moment, maybe? I don't know.
That's pretty much it. Yeah. That was a place that I created.
Right.
That was safe.
Yeah.
That was like my place where I was safe.
Yeah.
And it was really hard. It was a lot of, like, especially the mornings. The mornings were the hangovers are the worst. I was debilitated.
Mm.
I couldn't even get out of bed.
Mm.
Couldn't think about tomorrow. It was just so, it was such a dark place to keep waking up in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, oh my goodness.
Because like, you're shining, like you feel like you're shining, you're pretty light during the night, drinking, getting super drunk, I guess.
Yeah.
Going to bed at one point and then like going from heaven to hell.
A little bit.
Right? So you wake up like, fuck. Who am I? What's happening? Like, and then, like, what was... because it's interesting, because I drank a lot of alcohol in my youth on weekends, and but I luckily never had... I had bad moments and bad mornings and days and hangovers, whatever. But... And I notice some days that the next drink will make me better because it's just how it works. But I never came to the point that I woke up and had the feeling like I need alcohol to get me feel better. So were you aware of when that kicked in your life? Or did it just happen and you...
Yeah, it kind of just happens over time. Yeah. It slowly becomes the thing you do.
Yeah.
I don't think there was a moment that it was like, I'm self-medicating.
Yeah.
I didn't think of it like that. I didn't think of it like that. It was such an... The thing with alcohol, for me, again, very personal, just for me, is that it is a self-medication thing that I was doing.
Yeah.
And it's everywhere. It's in every restaurant. It's in every store, like corner store. It's so accessible that it's almost crazy now to me looking back that it is that way.
Mm.
Because it's like, this is normal. Everybody just drink and party and it's all good.
Yeah.
But the chaos that comes from alcohol and drinking in the family life, in personal lives, in on the roads, car accidents, the court systems. It's a huge impact on us, but we just keep going, keep going, keep drinking, right?
I really appreciate that you are here and open to talk about it, because I think it's a super important topic for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Because it's like you said, it's usual to do that. It's kind of, it's part of our daily life. Alcohol is not a forbidden thing. It's like you have to have an age and then you're allowed to do it as much as you want, whenever you want. So,
yeah.
But it's still an addicting drug, right? and which is in often like gets swept under the carpet a bit.
Totally.
Or a lot.
A lot. yeah.
So that's why I appreciate a lot that you are happy to talk about it and share.
Of course.
Your experiences. I know that, so but I ask you because the listeners don't know. So how was your family drinking, like alcohol-wise? Had it an impact or influence to your behavior, maybe?
So I will say that the place that I grew up, it was pretty normal to drink on the weekends,
mm-hmm.
you know? And that's kind of its own culture.
Mm-hmm.
Like we have like the beer store.
Yeah.
And you drive in just like a fast food restaurant and you order and they open up the door and the window and they deliver your beer just like your food.
Yeah.
So, for me, no matter where I was destined to learn this lesson.
Yeah.
It was like my own personal choice to consume the way that I did. It wouldn't have mattered if it was with my friends or with my family. My family did a great job of like monitoring us once we turned 19. And like I left, you know, but I've got two brothers too, right? And like we know you're going to drink. So we would rather you drink here
mm-hmm.
so we can watch you.
Right.
Which I agree.
Yeah.
You know, like boys and girls will be boys and girls. They're going to go and get in trouble.
Yeah.
But they would rather have had it so we were
more safe.
More
while
safe.
While doing.
Yeah. 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 So, and my parents did a great job of that. They were always looking out for us and like making sure we were okay.
Yeah.
You know, but I also think there's a part of alcohol that like nobody really sees, and that's the dark side of it if it develops into this for
yeah.
people, right? So like I don't think now my parents would have allowed that if they knew how much I would have suffered
because of yeah.
it. They
yeah.
probably would have been like no, right? Because like you don't want that for your kid.
Yeah.
But you don't think in those terms when you don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
And we don't know what we don't know.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not their fault.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Afterwards, yeah. You always know better. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, it's been a bit of a wild ride.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, luckily here and now I'm talking about it and see it as a ride you learn from a lot. What was your... Do you had a moment like where you would say now that was my deepest moment while I was a drinker?
Yeah, so that's called a rock bottom.
The rock bottom.
When you hit the rock bottom.
When you hit the rock, yeah.
Yes, so I actually had quite a few rock bottoms.
Mm.
And depending on who you are, that rock bottom...
Sorry, I have to...
Yeah, of course.
Before we go to the rock bottom.
Yes.
How do you manage to... Did you hide it?
Like hide by drinking?
Yeah.
Like in the toilet? Like put it in like the top of
in
the toilet?
In your daily life?
No.
No.
No, no. I was like very open. Just like it's on the counter.
Okay.
No. I don't think I ever hid it. I never felt like I had to.
Yeah.
I guess. Is that weird?
Well, it depends on which environment you are, I guess.
Okay.
If you're in the environment where nobody really cares that there's alcohol around, you
right.
probably don't have to think about it. But if you're in an environment where you maybe feel like, oh, they could see that I have a problem, you probably would start hiding it. And the other question I have is financial-wise, because alcohol costs a lot of money.
Mm.
Did you kind of work for it as well, or was it no problem to you to handle the financial part of how much alcohol you need to get your
fix?
Yeah, I know.
That I don't think I ever figured that out. Financially, that was where half of my money was going.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. The other half was like bills, food, your rent, whatever.
Yeah.
But like every last dollar that I had after everything was paid,
yeah,
went into alcohol.
Yeah. How much do you drink on the worst days?
I don't know, like 12 beers and a bottle of rum.
A bottle of rum and 12 beers?
Yeah. But like, and then go to the bar after maybe. But that was like a normal day.
That was a normal day?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
For weeks.
Years.
For years.
Yeah. Fuck. I know, man. I'm laughing now because it's crazy that I did that. But it was a lifestyle. I was a champion drinker.
That's what I thought. Like, how do you manage to like not falling into the water or not, like, I don't know, get picked up by the police every night or whatever? Like, but it's crazy how what the body is able to to figure out, right? It's like, I mean, I would say I'm pretty good in hiding when I'm drunk.
Okay.
But like, this is a stage I never thought about. I know that I never get there.
Yeah.
And I don't want to, but it's like incredible to hear that, because I know how to drink a lot, but if I hear like drinking 12 beer and a bottle of rum every day for years.
Yeah.
Holy moly. Like,
yeah. 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 Wow. And you don't avoid falling into the water. In fact, I fell into into the water a lot.
Yeah.
It is incredible looking back and going that's how I was. And I think you also used the word managing.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't managing anything.
No. Yeah.
I was a stumbling around moron.
Yeah.
A lot of the time, you know, like that is the part of the drinking that people would see at the end of the night.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, he's like wobbling, he's walking down the road, and we've all seen that.
Yeah.
Friends on Instagram, whatever. But the stuff that you don't see is what happens when you get home.
Yeah.
And that person is at home and then they're like drinking again in 4 hours. Like, yeah. I would pass out and wake up in the middle of the night and start drinking again, or I would wake up at 7 a.m. and then start drinking. Like, it was all the time, it was constantly, it was like it was like I was consumed by it.
Yeah.
Right. And that's when I first heard about Alcoholics Anonymous, which is the group.
What kind of people were around you during that years?
I floated around a lot. Yeah. So I moved a lot.
Yeah.
But, you know, I had partners that watched me go through it, and friends that were aware of it, you know. And the thing with that is that everyone else is still trying to have a normal life. So, mm-hmm. like, they drink on the weekends, and I show up on a weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Well, everyone's drinking, so there he is. Mm-hmm. He's just part of the party.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so most people didn't know. Most people didn't really know how much I was suffering.
Right.
And how would you? You don't really ask. I didn't know how to say it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I, you know, if I did, if I could have when I was, like, 27 or 28, I would have been like, something's wrong. Like, but I just didn't know. It's a really weird phenomenon with alcohol. Even going into my first meeting, I didn't think alcohol was the problem.
Yeah.
And how weird is that?
Yeah.
I thought it was the world shitting on me.
Yeah. You are the victim.
I'm the victim.
Yeah.
Playing poor me.
Yeah.
This scenario, everything sucks.
Yeah.
It's the world is
against you.
Against me.
Yeah.
You know? So it took me a long time to figure that out. That's not what was happening. Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. I know, it's a puzzle.
Yeah, but it's like, yeah, I have so many flashbacks like in situations where I like were drunk. And so, because my question is like, did you ever did stupid stuff?
Oh, fuck yeah. So much stupid stuff, man.
Because I'm pretty controlled when I'm drunk. or when I was drunk, because I'm not drinking a lot anymore. But and then there's at some point, like, my brain always starts thinking about funny stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Not like criminal stuff or bad stuff.
Yeah.
Just doing fun stuff, and which are all sometimes on the edge.
Yes.
Of the rules or the expectations, environment, and
totally.
But yeah, did you? Yeah. What was your?
Oh man, like
line you walked on.
I would do anything. I was a crazy person. I would streak naked down the street.
Right.
I would dance at clubs, take my shirt off, and like go around the bar. Just kind of like horseplay, like on the beach, just like rope swinging, or like, you know,
entertaining,
and just like, look at me, I'm being fucking stupid, and that was like a thing that I did, which a lot of people do as we grow up.
Yeah,
and we look back.
Looking for attention.
Looking for attention, you know. So there was, there's like embarrassing moments, of course, that we look back and go, oh, I shouldn't have done that. But that was before everyone had phones. So there's not like a lot of proof, which is awesome.
Yeah, no videotape.
No videotape, man. But I will tell a funny story. So this one time, there was this slide in Vancouver, and it was on the dock. And it was like, it was Canada Day weekend, and it was roped off. So you're like, no one's allowed on the slide. Because there's thousands of people, tens of thousands of people on the beach. And I swam out to this dock, and I got up onto this slide naked.
And drunk.
And drunk. Fucking in front drunk. Of thousands of people. And I started screaming the national anthem. I sang the whole thing from the beginning to the end. Oh, Canada. The whole beach starts singing along with me. And I'm just like standing there naked, right? And like, well, all the cops come out of the crowd and they start standing on the beach. And they're like, get off the slide. You're not allowed on there. It's roped off. And I'm like, no, I'm never coming down. They're like, if you come down right now, we won't arrest you. But you can't go down the slide. So I didn't, luckily. I came back down the slide, and then I swam back to shore. They gave me my clothes back, and I didn't get arrested. But that would be one of the things that I would do.
Yeah.
You know. No, nobody had phones, though. So that I'm so glad about that. Yeah. It was cold that day. But, you know, I get that, that's part of just letting go of, I guess, that need to entertain in that type of weird way. So, yeah, it was interesting.
Yeah, for sure. I think there's a lot of stuff happened on the edge. And then you said, like, there's several times you came to the rock bottom.
The rock bottom. Oh, that's right. So that's the next part of it. So this is after the fun. Once the fun is over, unfortunately, the super dark side of rock bottom is waking up on the street. You know, in the middle of the night. Like falling asleep at a bar at 8 o'clock, you know, or, you know, waking up in your apartment and like your room is destroyed, or, you know, or you lose a job, or you get fired. All these embarrassing, really weird situations that you put yourself in when you're just drinking all the freaking time, you know, and you can't control it. Out of control, rock bottom. You know, and like that, it was okay. Like I was okay with it, which was another weird thing. I wasn't like at a point where I was like, this is bad. I thought it was funny. It was very weird. Like, I think another important thing to mention is like working, I'm not going to say with men, but when we're there's a culture of chaos that I think men create on job sites, and with each other too. When we're out at the bar and we're all drinking together, mm-hmm. the way that we act and the way we talk about how we act when we're in groups of men, mm-hmm. It's almost like encouraged to be the fuck up. Mm-hmm. It's cool
to create a story.
It's cool to create a story. Like you rode your truck into a ditch.
Yeah.
You're divorced.
Yeah.
Your kids hate you.
Yeah.
You got arrested. All that's cool.
Yeah.
It's all like, that's so funny.
Yeah.
So me getting to these situations, me getting into them, when I was at work and talking about them with my colleagues, it was a joke.
Yeah. You were the funny guy.
You're a funny guy. Like, that's cool, man. Like, I'm so glad. Like, it's like, oh, that's awesome. It's really weird why guys do that.
Yeah.
So I guess I just never really thought about it too much because everybody was like, it's all good, man.
You got some likes.
Yeah. Yeah.
For every weird thing you did.
Totally.
Chair, right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like you got a joke. It was a joke for people. So. I guess just over years, like, it finally caught up to me. And, you know, again, with, like, the personal journey, it's all very hard to describe. But getting used to the rock bottom.
Getting used to it?
Getting used to it. Like, it's like, it's okay. It's not a problem.
Oh, that's what happened?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, you're just like, it's no big deal. Yeah. It's no big deal that I got evicted out of my apartment.
Right.
The neighbors were there. They called the cops.
Yeah. Fuck off.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's like, I don't care, man. Yeah. Like, get out of my business, right? So, like, getting used to that type of behavior was part of it.
Right. You know? Okay.
And I feel like it really, it happened. The groups that I've sat in, the stories that I've heard.
Yeah.
That's pretty common, is that you get used to the chaos that you create.
Yeah.
So the piece de resistance, the last rock bottom that I hit was in an apartment here in Victoria.
Yeah.
And the person that is also included in this story would be also super happy to have me share it because it was the beginning of both of our journeys to sobriety and recovery.
Yeah.
And it was 2 a.m. It was my birthday. It was March 19th. And we had been drinking for a couple months. We were like, we partying together, just carrying on, going to the bars. And we were both very similar in everything I just talked about, how our lives were going.
Yeah.
We were both we met each other and we were both the same type of person.
Yeah.
So we kind of enabled each other to continue doing the same sort of thing.
Mm.
Now your partner and you are, oh, it's all good. We're both crazy. Yeah.
We're on the same wave.
We're on the same wave, right?
Yeah.
But that wave came to a crash. 2 a.m, like we got in a big fight. Upstairs in the top floor of an apartment building, all the neighbors could hear us partying and carrying on. Yeah. And like crash, boom, bang, do-do-do-do. And the cops come and they're like, what's going on? There's tables flipped up. There's broken glass. There's like, you know, it was so crazy, man. And like, anyway, so the cops came. They separated us. And we weren't allowed to talk to each other until they resolved the domestic issue, right? They had to figure out what happened, why it happened, So I woke up in the morning and they came back to the apartment and they let her come in and get her stuff. And then... took her off and then she had to leave. They gave me an order that said you're not allowed to talk to her until the court date.
Yeah.
And That was like 4 months from the night that it happened until, but COVID just struck. It was full swing and everything was shut down. They're like, you'll be lucky if you even see her for a year. And they walked out. I had an apartment full of all of our stuff. COVID just struck. The rent was due. The job was gone. She was gone. The other half of the rent was gone. And I was like, what the fuck happened to my life? My partner just got taken away. She ended up going into a rehab program, luckily, and did that for like 40 days during the time we were apart.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what just happened to my life? What the fuck? Like, hello?
Realization.
Realization.
Yeah.
This is the worst you have ever felt in that moment.
Yeah.
Waking up and noticing that was happening.
It's all gone.
All gone. Yeah. You got to find a new place to live. You got to figure it out. So it was just a shit storm of a time in my life. I had never felt so shitty. And I didn't know what to do or where to go. All my dreams, like we kind of started this company during that time also, which is like another interesting story. The company survived and so did our friendship and so did our love for each other and our healing journey.
Yeah.
That all took place when the cops and the court case, once it was closed, we were allowed to see each other again.
Yeah.
And we had to like, you know, when you like, you fuck up or you break up with someone and it's really shitty.
Yeah.
And then time goes by and you like, you need to see them again to like say you're sorry.
Yeah.
It's like, I have to, there's no way that you can't. We were just together for 2 years and then this happened. So we were ripped apart. So we had to come back together and like talk and figure it out.
Yeah.
And in that time, the healing journey began for both of us. The day I quit drinking, the night I quit drinking, I was down the road at Dallas Road.
Mm-hmm.
It was like 10 o'clock at night. And I took my drink. I was still drinking after the cops.
Thing. Yeah.
So that's another thing. I kept drinking for like 2 more months trying to figure out what to do. Finally, I was like,
Did you ever had like thoughts or like depressions or like bad thoughts to give up on yourself and everything?
Oh man, that's such a hard thing to relive, to think about. But yeah, there was like a lot. There was a lot of, I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know where I'm going to go.
Yeah.
I don't even know how to feel better.
Yeah.
I just like, I have no answers. I have zero answers.
Yeah.
And like, feeling that hungover, being that depressed, thoughts, I would rather be dead than actually deal with this.
Yeah.
Because I feel so crappy. Yeah. I feel so crappy and I just don't know what to do. Like, take me away. Like, I don't want to be here. Yeah. That was like the overall thing, right? Like, and again, for everybody, their personal journey is like very deep and very personal, but like that, luckily, I have a very loving background, family, like very deep rooted love.
Mm.
And I personally didn't have like suicidal thoughts and like I didn't go that far, but I just didn't want to deal with what I had to deal with.
Yeah.
Which was quitting.
Yeah.
Quitting drinking. That's it. I just didn't want to do it. It's like, I love it. So there was a couple months where it was very difficult to like get out of that.
Mm.
Right.
Mm.
But luckily, like I said, I had a loving background and I started to look at how, because if I don't have the answers, then where are they?
Let's search.
Right.
Let's go out. Yeah.
I got to find it. I got to figure it out. Yeah. Like I at least make a phone call. Yeah. One phone call for 2 minutes just to talk to someone.
Yeah.
And so anyway, before I go into that, I just like that night quitting drinking, I walked to the beach. It was a beautiful night. Stars were out. The moon was shining. Full moon. Beautiful. and I poured my drink off of the cliff,
mm-hmm.
my last one, and I prayed to the universe to give me a sign that I could quit drinking. Just one little thing. I don't care what it is. If a bird comes and shits on my head right now, I will take it.
I take it, yeah.
Unfortunately, it wasn't a bird shitting on my head. I much would have preferred that. It was a phone call the next morning when I woke up from quitting drinking that my grandma had passed away the next day. My parents called me. Grandma, rest in peace. But that was the news. That was the sign. That was the thing that happened that was like, okay, I'm fucking quitting. There's no coincidences in this life. Like, things happen when they happen. And that was my, okay, it's time.
Yeah.
You're 35.
Yeah.
You have partied for 20 years.
Yeah.
It's over.
Yeah.
Make the phone call.
Yeah.
So I did. First phone call I ever made. Talked to some guy. He's like, this is like pretty intense therapy. I would maybe call just local AA, which is a group of people. Start there. He's yeah. like, if you need to get into like extreme therapy for dark, deep issues from your past,
yeah.
that's where you go.
Yeah.
But I made the call and that was the first thing I did. I walked into AA, knocked on the door. I was like, I guess I have to be here. This is where everyone says to go. I'm an alcoholic. I need help. And
what was the feeling?
Fucking scary, man. It was terrifying. It was like walking up to a church.
Were you going drunk on
no
somewhere?
No, I had quit.
Oh, you quit.
Yeah, that was it. I quit and I was like, I need help. I gotta fucking talk to somebody.
Yeah,
that was the beginning of the journey, you know. And the next journey
yeah.
right, the journey of the drinking had ended and the journey of healing and figuring out why I did all that stuff was the next part.
Yeah.
And that's what, like I said back at the beginning when we started, was like, if anything I just told you resonates with you and you hear a little bit of you in that story, make one call just to someone, just to see if maybe you're an alcoholic.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's
a good advice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
I saw myself a few times in there back in the days.
Like you,
from my,
what
yeah,
I was
from,
saying,
what I was saying, oh. like jumping into my past party life, whatever, seeing myself waking up in the bushes at night, all that stuff.
Yeah.
but yeah, like I said, I luckily never probably crossed that next step where you really get into addiction.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's good, man. Not everybody does. Some people learn a lesson. A normal person, and there's like, you know, the word normal, I'm not a huge fan on it.
I say it's not existing.
Yeah, might be non-existent, right? There's no such thing as normal, like, let's say a child. Mm-hmm. If you take a child and the child sticks their finger into the electrical socket and goes, poof, ow! Oh my God, what happened to my finger?
Mm-hmm.
You go, well, that's electricity and that's very dangerous and that will hurt you.
Yeah.
With alcohol, after you drink it once when you're a kid and you feel sick and you puke and you wake up the next morning,
be shitty.
You don't, most people, I mean, some people probably never drink again.
Some, yeah.
Some.
Yeah.
A very small amount of people. But the lesson never got learnt, like getting hurt when you're a kid.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. You just keep doing it.
It's funny because like you hear so often this sentence after a heavy party and heavy drinking, and then you call your friends and like, hey, how you feeling? Oh, I'm fucked. Like I just drunk too much. Like I will never drink again.
Yeah.
And everybody knows like, no, you will.
You will, man.
Right? So it's like, but saying it and not listening to yourself. Right. So you could, if you be honest and you say to your friends, I don't want to drink again because I'm feeling that bad.
Yeah.
Well, maybe you should think about what you just said, right? But I did it too. I said, I don't want to drink. I'm feeling so shitty, but you do it again the next week. So,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I know. It's incredible. The power of substance.
Mm.
And we see it now so much more in a lot of the fentanyl stuff that's going on, the freaking the addiction problems that our people are having, everything that's going on. It's quite clear that there's other things that are happening here that are scary.
Yeah.
For some people, you know?
Yeah. Did you have any physically problems doing that? Like, are you always fine and no liver issues or whatever?
Luckily, I was okay.
Yeah.
I never, like, my body is, like, pretty resilient. No, I never actually got physically hurt, which is awesome. But I also do want to mention, so going back to following your dreams and like accomplishing your goals, and if like feeling the sense of like there's a part of life that I'm missing out on, you know, and if anyone out there feels that way and there's a substance that's in your life, I promise you that if you address the substance issue, everything else that you're trying to achieve will fall into place. That is the thing that is holding you in a prison that you don't even know that you're in. If you want to hike a mountain, or if you want to run across the country, or if you want to make a movie, or you want to become an artist, deal with the substance issue, and your dreams are like on the other side of that. And it's not going to be easy, depending on how deep you have gone with it.
But it's closer than you think.
But it's closer than you think if you make a phone call. It really is. After a couple months of quitting drinking, I was feeling amazing. I felt great. I was accomplishing my goals. The hard work was the emotional stuff later on, but instantly felt better because my body was happy. It was healthy. It was clean.
Yeah.
It's like, thank you. Thank you for giving me what I need.
Yeah.
Food, water, the basic things that you need to live.
Yeah. Well, there's water and alcohol.
That's what I used to say.
Yeah, I know.
I know, man. So
any moments where you like, were close to falling back into your old behavior?
No. Luckily, I...
And like sober means like, zero
everything for 3 years, not one drop of any toxins at all. And no, my experience, my rock bottoms were so heavy, and the emotional trauma that I went through during the cops coming to the house and the pain that I went through, luckily I got the message.
Yeah.
If my grandma didn't pass away that day, I probably would have went back to drinking. That's how tricky alcohol can be.
Yeah.
But the message was very clear. It was very obvious for me, you know, but people go back after 5 years, go back after 10 years. Some people go back to it because you've been, you feel like you're safe. You feel like you're in a safe place. And, that's where all the work of doing Alcoholics Anonymous keeps you on your goals.
Yeah.
Keeps you targeting. Yeah. And that's its own work on itself, right? So I feel super blessed, super grateful that I haven't went back to alcohol. I don't think I'm going to. I feel like I've learned my lesson. I'm going into my 40s. I got my life back, which is another bonus for anyone out there listening. If you learn how to quit, if you learn how to get through it, your life is full and it's lovely and it's amazing. And everything about it is what you were missing. If you just can figure out that hard part, which is addiction, you know, no, never go back. That's it's kind of like puberty. I kind of look at it. I look at it like a stage. In my life that I went through, and I got through it. Like it's uncomfortable going through puberty and like all the things that happen to you, and that was my next pubescent section of my life. It was like I had to like live it, I had to feel it, I had to go through it, And then I had to like move to the next chapter, which is this chapter, which is wide open.
Oh yeah. And you know? That's a good connection here, because you said your boat, what's the name of your boat?
Our Therapy.
Yeah.
It's a very therapeutic place.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was part of the journey, buying the boat and moving into a place where I felt comfortable, and the pressures of affording everything in the city went away.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's,
so just to make sure, because you live on this boat.
I do live on this boat.
That's your home.
This is my home.
Since 2 years now.
Yeah. It'll be almost 2 years.
2 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. How's that?
Life on the boat?
Yeah.
Oh.
You feel drunk sometimes when you move, when you shake?
You know what? It kind of does. When you get up and you're like walking on land. Yeah, no. Boat life is like, it's very comfortable. If you've ever lived in like an RV or whatever. Yeah, it's pretty sweet. It's quiet. It's nice. I like it.
You drove around a bit? You just stayed in the harbor?
I've went to a couple of places. I went to a couple of islands last year, putted around. It's very sweet. Once you get off the land and you kind of look around on the ocean, like everything's way different. Everything looks different. Mm. Like you're in a
different
place.
Every second.
Every second.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's lovely. So we'll have to go out once I get that propeller, once I get that propeller fixed.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah. When's the last time you drank?
I had two glasses of wine yesterday.
Or when's the last time you got drunk?
Drunk?
Yeah.
I can't remember.
Oh, nice. That's good.
Actually, probably like really drunk. I can't remember actually. Wow.
Sweet. Good for you.
Yeah. No, I'm getting like, when I drink these days, I drink 2 or 3 glasses of wine or beers, and then I'm so tipsy and happy.
Yeah.
Like I don't need more than. And I know myself now that it's not going to make things better, because I figured luckily out that I can enjoy live moments, parties, dancing, everything. I can inhale or do without any alcohol influence or drugs.
Right.
Which is sometimes like I'm most grateful for that, because I never thought it will happen, because I always saw like I need a drink to go on the dance floor. I always need a drink to feel comfortable in on a party, whatever.
Yeah.
So figure that out, that I don't need drugs to feel comfortable in all these different environments, kept me away from it now, because like I don't need it anymore. That's but awesome. Which is, has a lot to do with anxiety, which I went through, which I figured out. And then being more aware of yourself helped me to stay away from it, because life is so fucking intense.
Yeah.
Sober.
Yeah.
That I sometimes say I don't need any drug, because life is drug enough. If you have the right perspective and the right connection.
Totally.
Like you don't need any drugs. Just right perspective, right moment, be aware, look out, and inhale, and like, wow, that gets me high.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, so luckily I can't remember when I was the last time drunk.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good, man.
Yeah. So you turned your life out of being a very crazy alcoholic into a stage, I would say, at the moment you're kind of on the way to have therapy and work your way back into your life, your decisions, your things you love, following your dreams, whatever that was, living on a boat, which called therapy, doing an acting study, which we said already a few times, it is kind of therapy as well.
Totally.
Because it is intense. It is about us. We have to get naked. We own the spot. We have to open up ourselves.
Yeah.
Is there anything at the, like, something in your daily life at the moment where you struggle with?
Oh, no. I mean, just the nerves of being in front of people.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. A little bit.
Yeah.
Right? But that's like stage fright. Mm-hmm. I think it's a little bit like stage fright, you know. Right now, like, every day just gets a little bit nicer. Mm. When I wake up and I'm not hungover, like, every day is a good day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But right now, am I struggling with anything? I wouldn't say struggling. I used to suffer.
Yeah.
Now, like you just said, I look outside and I'm like, holy shit, this is cool. It's overwhelming sometimes, but that's life. It is overwhelming.
Yeah.
But no, man, once I started meditating, exercising, and doing what my spirit wanted, following my call, whatever that is for people,
mm-hmm.
once I started really diving into what I want to do with myself and honoring what gifts I have, that's when everything kind of started opening up and like becoming very, they call it like the flow state. When you're on your path and you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, life is flourishing for you.
Yeah.
You know, and like,
I know exactly what you're talking about because it's exactly where I'm since I left Germany.
Right?
I'm in the flow.
You're on your path.
Yeah.
There where you're supposed to be, you know? And that's an incredible feeling on its own. Like, if anything is worth quitting drinking, that was finding that.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God.
Yeah.
I like feel so lucky, you know. I'm not rich. I don't have everything, all the toys and but the meaningful things, like doing a podcast or like making a music video or taking an acting class. That's stuff I always wanted to do. And I never knew how to do it, or I never took the time to learn how to do it because I was always busy drinking.
Right.
It was like 90% of my time, man. It was like I had this whole life built around drinking. And when I took that away, that day I quit, I had no idea what to do. I was like, I've got 15 hours a day where I don't know what to do with myself.
Yeah.
So I had to start doing those things, which is crazy now looking back that it was like that. But all that time, you know, it's very hard to make a music video.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of steps. You got to write the song. You got to record it. You got to do this. You got to do that. You got to do that. Learn all these things. 50 hours, 60 hours learning, 60 hours making it, whatever. That's all time that I now had to figure it out.
Yeah.
Figure out the program. Figure out the camera. Figure out how to run a business.
Yeah.
All those things that, like, I never would have done. I never did do, but I wanted to do them. So, you know, here we are. Back in school tomorrow.
Back in school tomorrow. No Zoom, hopefully.
No. Zoom sucks.
Always impressed me as like how you manage all your relationships around that. If people talk about that, like they, like you said, like you could hide during the week and then on the weekends kind of normal to get drunk, whatever.
Mm.
And that nobody can really get into you close enough to figure that out, right? Like that you are so good in protecting yourself and the behavior you do that nobody can get in there and say, okay, wait a second. Maybe this guy needs help, or maybe because you're getting more, I don't know, maybe you get so confident in what you do and how you do it, and you feel so right that you're not able to let someone else in.
So there was like a couple times people wanted to say something, but I don't know if they knew how.
Yeah.
And like there was general concern, like this is what he's doing, but nobody really knew how. It's like, again, it's really hard to break through to someone and say like what you're doing is wrong, like what you're doing is bad, especially if everyone else is still drinking, and that's the problem, is drinking. So there's a very weird thing with that, is like, how can I tell this person to stop doing it if I'm doing it myself? It's like a contradicting, or you're,
so you think it would be helpful if the person who gives advice or tries to break through to you is not drinking at all?
It would make more sense. Mm-hmm. If you didn't drink and I still was drinking and they were like, hey man, like the shit is going wrong because you're drinking. Mm-hmm. I can't then go, but you drink. Mm-hmm. You don't drink. And your life looks awesome, but my life looks shitty. Mm. It would be easier, I think, for someone that didn't drink to get someone to quit drinking.
Yeah.
Than if you drank with them.
Yeah, for sure.
You know. Yeah. And that's a whole other thing too.
There's an argumentation already breaking away.
Yeah.
Because yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like one of my partners smoked weed and I drank. And it was like very combative. It's mm-hmm. like, you're drinking too much. Well, you're smoking too much.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Shut up.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. You're the last person who should tell me.
Yeah.
And it would, like, when there's, like, how would you, is there an advice you can give how to address an issue? Like, let's say a friend of mine has a really bad alcohol problem. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how to communicate that, but I see it, and everybody sees it.
Yeah.
But it's not a problem. Right. Like, there's no problem with it, but you see it could get a problem for him or for her. So do you have an advice when you're looking back when you were alcoholic? Mm-hmm. What would be helpful if people out there are having this situation? What can you do?
That's a tricky one. What comes to mind is asking someone if, like, asking them how you're doing, or like, just like, I know that you're drinking a lot and I know that it's hard and I know things aren't going great for you. How are you feeling? Like, what's going on with you? Because it's really hard to describe to someone if they're not like showing genuine care for you. Like, hey, like, come on in, sit down. Like, what's going on? I found like people would tell me, you just quit drinking, man. Just quit drinking. It was like, no, fuck you. It's like, that's, mm-hmm. that's not what's wrong. Like, something else is going on, right? So it's like, genuinely caring for someone and like going over to the house and like having like a one-on-one conversation, checking in on someone, how mm-hmm. they're actually doing. I'm not here to talk about anything else. I'm here to talk about you. Mm-hmm. And I want to be here for you. And I need to know if you're doing okay. Mm. I don't think we do that a lot anymore, mm-hmm. you know?
It's actually good that you mentioned it, because normally my first question in the podcast is always like, how you are feeling just in this moment.
Right.
It's a bit late, but I will ask you later.
Yeah. No, yeah. But that's it, right? It's just reaching out to your friends and family. If you know that they're using stuff a lot, then yeah, just go over and like sit down and hang out, right? Like,
be interested.
Be interested. Yeah. You don't have to go over and say, hey, I've got the solution for you.
Yeah.
You know, but show that you actually care and that you're like worried about them. I know it's not easy to do. It's uncomfortable. People don't like to like get in other people's business. Mm. It's your life, man. Not my life. Mm. Like, you figure it out on your own. But the ironic thing about that is that some people are on their own journey and they have to go through the darkness to get to the light. Mm. And you cannot say, there is nothing you can do except let them go through it. Mm. Unfortunately, that ends with some really nasty endings for people, like dying. You watch someone go through this enough, you might have tried everything. You might have put them in rehab. You might have called the cops. You might have took away their allowance. You might have fired them. You think that you're doing all these things to cut them off, to help them mm. in a way. You think it's helping, mm. but it's not, because the addiction has got them so wrapped up that they have to figure it out on their own. There's no one can tell them anything. They have to go through it and unfortunately get to rock bottom on their own.
I think it was every big issue you have in life, if you struggle with things, alcoholism, any drugs, or issues, problems in your daily life, if you're not like falling off the cliff or walking into the wall, and like you want to change something, it's tough to change other people, right? So you can be there, and you can be, that's what you said, like be interested, listen to them, ask questions, but never go in there with the intention, I want to change this person.
No.
Because you will not.
No, unfortunately.
They
not.
Have to change. They have to put the first step in, I want to change, and then you.
Yeah. And the real power and the real interesting part about the groups that you go into,
mm-hmm.
when you're in the circle of people and they're talking about their struggle, the way that the program was designed was to only share your experience, not to preach anything. Mm-hmm. You go in, you sit down, and you talk about you. That's it. Not that person, not that person. You talk about you. And in doing that, taking turns, you hear your story come out of the lips of the other people, and then you go home and you're like, oh man, that dude, like, that guy, like, beat the shit out of his best friend and broke his nose and broke his arm and, like, now he went to jail. Whoa. I got in a fight with a friend.
Yeah.
It was that close.
Listening to yourself,
And you go, that could have been me last weekend. And then you start to, like, hear your story. And that's how you start to figure it out yourself.
Yeah.
When it hits close to home and you're like, that's me. Damn it. I feel like that guy, or I feel like that person. Okay. Now I've got a place to start.
Mm-hmm.
At least I've got, like, an idea. I'm not alone, first of all. And second of all, you're never alone, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the other thing. Being in addiction, and that you can be very isolated and shut everything off from the world, and you feel alone. You don't think that anyone gives a shit about you, you know?
Yeah.
And that, so there's another thing that I would say, or if you're trying to help someone, is like, go check out a group. Even if you're not sure, even if you don't think it's for you, you don't. And the beautiful thing now, I know we don't like Zoom so much, but like you can literally go online and just listen at any time to a meeting from all around the world. You can dial into Alaska and listen to absolute strangers talk about sobriety.
Yeah. You can put on a walkie-talkie podcast and listen to random people like Darren.
Yeah. Yeah, and you might just hear your story.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I hope one person listens to this and is like, that's me.
Yeah.
Dude, that's you, person out there in podcast world, go to AA, make a call. You know?
Yeah.
But it's your own journey, you know? Like it's very personal, and that's it. I hope that talking about it, and you know, another thing too is like, I don't like to genderize, you know, especially nowadays. It's like, oh, men this, women this, da, da, da. There's a whole thing going on. But for me personally, my experience is I didn't like fucking talking about my feelings.
Yeah.
I didn't want to talk to anyone because I'm like, it's uncomfortable. It feels gross. I don't want to open up in front of people. And that culture I was talking about earlier, like on the workforce and whatever, the reason that communication is broken and it's encouraged to be a fuck up is because most of those people aren't interested in talking about their feelings.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So like, that's why they, like, men's groups are so powerful.
Yeah.
Because you go in and like a guy can talk to another guy without having to put on the this front of like, I'm a man, I'm super strong, nothing hurts me.
Mm. How do you feel?
How do I feel?
Mm-hmm. Just now.
Oh, I don't like doing that?
No. Just sitting here with me, talking about life.
Oh, it's the best.
Rain outside.
It's the best thing ever.
The feelings inside you.
Yeah, it's like super happy. I'm just like connecting with someone else and being truthful about who I am. It is empowering. It's like it feels good to like say my truth, speak my truth, you know? And that was something I was missing. That's the ferry or the ship.
The ferry to Port Angeles.
Yeah, yeah.
So what were you saying with the feeling you were missing? Or the
The feeling, like the empowering feeling of like saying who you are, what you are, why you want things. That's part of the communication that comes out of you that I was, I guess, afraid of, maybe. I didn't want to talk my truth. I didn't want to, like, open up and, hey, world, this is Darren. This is who I am. Because maybe they're not going to like me, or maybe I look stupid or whatever. Mm. But I looked a lot stupider with my pants around my ankles walking down the street than I do just being myself. You know? It's just like, it's a lovely interaction. And you genuinely care about people, which is nice.
Yeah.
You know? So that's rare. That's hard to find.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know? But I think when you're on your path and you're doing the things that you want to do, that's when you attract the right people.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause you're open and you're like... Mm-hmm. Your magnetic field is lined up and you're like, whatever you believe, it doesn't matter. But I personally have experienced now bringing new people into my life. It's the right people. It's not the guy that you're drinking with at the bar that you don't even know.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you're actually meeting people who align with you on your trip, on your journey, you know, and that's worth everything too. You don't get anywhere by yourself, you know?
That's what I have to learn a lot.
You need help in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
And that's like, it's so great when you meet someone like that. And it's like, oh, you like what I like.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, now we can do those things together.
Yeah.
And it's fucking hard to make friends when you're older.
Yeah.
Nobody, it's awkward. It's hard. It's like, oh, God, I don't want to do that.
I have my five friends.
Yeah, I've got five friends, you know, and like whatever. It's hard to make new friends.
Yeah, and it takes time.
It takes time. Yeah. It does, for sure. But this is a great way to do it, you know?
That's actually funny to say that, because I feel like all the people I had in my podcast, I try to walk through life and encounter people every time as friends. That's what I try, because there's this great sentence from Buddhism says, there's no foreigner, there's only friends you don't know yet.
Oh.
Right? And this sticks in my brain since I read it. And because this is, for me, so true, because I don't know you. I know you now a bit better, but I'm still not knowing you.
Yeah.
And I don't know anybody out there who I meet first time.
Yeah.
But maybe they can all be good friends if I'm encounter them openly and be interested. It's like, hey, it's like, you're not an enemy, like, you know, foreigner, like, you're just someone I don't know, right? But I forgot what I wanted to say.
Do you practice Buddhism?
No.
Oh, you just read a bit about it?
Yeah, sometimes.
Nice.
Yeah. But what were you saying? So yeah, anyways, this is kind of the way I try to walk through life, which is, oh yeah, the guests here, right? So everybody is welcome in my world, which is sometimes too intense, but then I kind of, yeah, whatever. But all the people I had on my podcast, I feel like they kind of friends. Yeah. Even if some of them never saw them again, never speak a word with them, but because they part of my journey, so it's kind of, yeah, it's a sharing moment you create, very private sometimes, very intense sometimes, which creates a bond somehow. Yeah, but yeah, that's That's true. All the
totally.
All the guests I had probably are kind of friends. Yeah. What is when you will die one day, which we all do, what do you want to be remembered of?
Oh, that's such a good question.
So you're dead. You're looking from somewhere down or up to the earth, wherever you are, in the ocean, in the sky, maybe nowhere.
Yeah, maybe nowhere. But maybe everywhere.
Maybe still on the boat with your soul, whatever.
Crossing the ocean.
And people thinking about you, and let's say there's a fire of some friends and family of you in Ontario. And they remember, oh, you know, Darren.
Yeah. it's hard to say, but like maybe that I really like leaving something behind, like artistic, like something to show that this world was like really interesting or it was exciting for me. So like I'm still kind of like, maybe that I was, okay, here it is. Mm-hmm. That I was brave enough to quit drinking and follow my passions. Mm-hmm. That would be good. Mm-hmm. If that was the only message that I get to leave behind, so be it. Because it was such a huge part of growing up, you know, and there's still lots of growing to do. Like, I still feel like I'm 20. I'm still that 20-year-old kid. Yeah. I'm just like, my body's a little bit older and my gray hairs are coming through, but I don't feel like old.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, I just learned this lesson. So yeah, like that I was brave enough to like do what I wanted to do. Yeah. Not that the things that drinking told me that I should do, you know? But you know, I think it's also like super interesting people that leave like monuments in their name, you know, like the Taj Mahal or like the pyramids or whatever. Like if I could leave something like that, that'd be pretty sweet, but I feel like that takes a lot of money.
like a
structure
or really structure. Or could it be a song?
Like, or a song. I can leave songs. I've already got some songs out there.
Maybe a movie. Right. So there's lots of, like, it doesn't have to be a building or structure.
No, it could be something. Yeah. But it'd be pretty cool to actually have just a statue of you that would last forever. But I'll leave some stuff.
Yeah.
I'll leave this stuff. I don't know what I'm going to do with my, like, the rights to my stuff, though. That's the thing.
I can take care of it.
You can have it. But you're going to die just after me. Like, it's only going to be a couple years.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe
what about you
earlier?
What about you? What would you?
I love that question to ask, but not to get asked.
Oh, okay.
Because I feel like I'm not there yet to answer it.
Right.
But anyways, you asked me back, so I will answer it for now.
Yeah.
How do I want to get remembered when I die? I think very important for me is, when I die and people thinking about who was this guy, that I show everyone who knows me that that life is good and nobody, like there's no reason for fight. There's no reasons for war. There's no reasons for all this bad behavior of humans. They're coming from somewhere, and I have a devil in myself as well. Everybody has it, but if I show with how I lived life that positivity, peacefulness, freedom, love is better than all the other stuff, then I would be pretty happy.
That one's better than mine.
There's no judgment.
You can't be right and you can't be wrong.
Exactly.
That's a good
one. I would love to leave stuff behind, like songs or maybe movies or podcasts.
Well, you can leave this. This will be left behind, which is good.
Yeah.
How's the guitar playing going?
It's going, in my opinion, pretty well.
Yeah.
But I have to learn to share.
Right.
Because I always feel like I don't want to disturb anybody and I don't want to annoy anybody with my voice, with my playing, with whatever I do.
Oh, okay.
But this is also part of the study I do because
yeah,
being able to show who you are, what you do.
Totally.
And it's okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if people don't like it, they don't have to...
Doesn't matter.
To listen or to watch it. Yeah. Big step was the podcast. I always was like, no, I can't do it because what if people don't like it?
Yeah.
Like, I don't... And then it came to the point that it doesn't matter.
It doesn't.
Right?
You like
so,
it.
Yeah, even if I don't like it, but it's like, yeah, I should like it, but even...
That makes sense.
Yeah. But there's sometimes... yeah, it doesn't matter because the people who don't like it, they just shouldn't listen.
Yeah, they'll shut it off, whatever.
Right? And it's the same with playing guitar now and singing.
Yeah.
And feeling it's good.
Yeah.
To the few people I did it, they say that's good for just playing 8 months. Now, like, okay, yeah, maybe I should share it a bit more. Totally. And then the same was acting. Like, I love it.
Yeah.
So why not shine?
Yeah, man.
And hide.
Don't hide.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
Sweet.
Do you... And if people don't like it, they will not watch it or not listen.
That's it. There's so many things. There's so many things out there to watch anyway.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
It's like they're gonna you're gonna find it or you're not. Doesn't like you know. When you practice guitar, do you play to a click?
No.
Okay. Should practice that. Just the strumming.
Right.
To the click. That's gonna help if you want to record.
Yeah.
The next step is just playing to the metronome.
Yeah.
Strumming to it because. Yeah. Anytime you record a song, for the most part, you have, if you want other instruments in it, you have to do it to the click.
Yeah,
so just on there, get a little metronome and just practice changing the speed.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good hint.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Because then you can come over to the studio once you have a song.
And we can. Four already.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. So practice, pick your favorite one and practice it to a metronome.
Yeah.
Whatever the speed is, like however you play it, match it. Don't speed up. Don't change the speed of your song. Just find the tempo.
Yeah.
Whatever you're strumming, it's gonna be like ding 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 ding, and then tap that into the metronome. Tap 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 tap, and then practice playing to that click track, and then we'll record it.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah. Because that's you gotta share your music, man. Everybody, like, that's the thing. Like, we love being stimulated with new music and new stuff and new this and new that, right? That's the point. I think that's part of it. I think that's the point. Like, what are we here for, you know? Like, share your gifts. People aren't going to always like it. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Like, not everyone likes country music, but there's a lot of people that do. You know? So, if you like country music, start. What kind of music do you write? Like, is it similar to something?
I don't know. I will play. You have a guitar here, right?
I do.
Yeah, so I play a song afterwards, and then you tell me.
Okay, that'd be sweet.
Good. Right. Okay. Last advice for you to the world out there.
Darren's advice.
Walkie-talkie podcast spreads out Darren's advice for your life.
Advice for life. Oh, man.
That's a good rhyme. Advice for life.
That is good. That is good. I've always thought, you know, be nice to each other. That's a good thing to do, you know? But yeah, like my advice would be if there's a substance in the way, just reach out and try and find some help and like talk about it. There's so much goodness that comes out of breaking through your addiction. And there's many, many people that are in bad addictions, you know? That would be it. Just make one phone call. Fucking call me. My number's 778-689-1019. I'll call you. You can talk to me, man. I will talk to you one-on-one. Go for it. That's my life advice. If you're struggling with addiction, make a call to a person even if it's an absolute stranger, that's sometimes best.
Yeah.
Doesn't, you don't have to know them. You. They don't know you, man. Just call a random person. They'll talk to you and they'll be like, yep, here's what to do.
Yeah.
And that can be, that one phone call could change your life.
Tremendously.
It would change your life tremendously. Everything you want is on the other side of your addiction. Yeah. I know it sounds crazy. I might even sound like an idiot to you if you're one of those people. It doesn't always resonate with people, but it's the truth.
Yeah.
You know?
Cool.
Yeah, man.
Darren, thanks a lot.
No, thank you.
For opening all your thoughts and part of your life. And yeah, take care, and we stop here and stop playing guitar.
Sounds good. Thank you very much for having me on the podcast. It's super sweet. I have always loved doing stuff like this. And for you out there, I love you. I don't know you, but I love you.
Yeah, me too. Lots of love.
Lots of love.